Just change the batteries so they're all good.
And I give the speaker one of those.
One of those, yeah.
And what about me?
You can get one too. It's just
the
two of you. You can talk in this
one,
but
stay close.
That's the problem. So maybe if you want to use this one anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because we have two,
yeah,
we can use one.
Yeah. Oh, no, because what's came in?
I love it.
Get you wired up.
Right.
Oh no, you think I should have one too?
Yeah. I think we'll take that off.
And that goes in the pocket.
Yep, in the pocket, but just don't forget to turn it off.
Where is it on now?
It's off now. See, on, the light becomes green.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's off. See?
Okay.
Now it's off.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me just make sure that it's off.
Here's your.
Thank you.
Well, I think we should begin the final session of this conference. My name is Hugh Tindall-Biscoe, and I've had a minor role in helping Jenny with organising it, but a very minor role. Now, this is the final session in which Roger Short is going to attempt to sum up. He has done this on a number of other conferences I've been to, and it is an extraordinary skill. So Roger is a professor at the Melbourne University in the... Better look it up. Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences. He's a fellow of this Academy of Science. Roger.
Well, thanks, Hugh, and thanks, Jenny. And I'd like to just say a word of thanks to Frank Fenner. He meant so much to me. The only reason I used to come each year to Academy of Science meetings here was so that I could sit next door in the coffee room and talk to Frank. And even in his last year of his life, he was still alive. So I feel very much that aging is a thing of the past. And to be honest, I'm 83. When I was born in 1930, there were 2 billion people on Earth, and today there are 7.1. So you can see why I got interested in population growth from the word go. And I hasten to add that I'm still working full-time at Melbourne University, teaching medical students and science students and publishing papers. And I'll be spending all Monday and all Wednesday giving lectures to 350 students. So some of the ideas I've heard here in the last 2 days will be relayed to 350 of the brightest people you can think of. And I think there's lots of hope for the future, because the generation coming along behind us is so much wiser and better and enthusiastic than I ever was. I was an absolute twerp as a student. I sort of shudder at the thought. But the generation that's coming along is wonderful. So let's get down to the subject matter. Listening to all the talks on Monday and today, just a few words stuck in my mind. I can't remember who said it, but the quote is, "Nor lose the name of action." And that's what we've done. Everyone's very happy to talk about population growth and climate change and isn't it awful that this is happening and that's happening. But I don't think I've heard a single talk where somebody has said, now this specifically is what we're going to do about it. We've lost the name of action. So if you'll forgive me, I'm going to try and give 3 or 4 examples of very definite things I think we could initiate. I'm keeping my eye on the clock, and I'm listening to Jenny and her bell, and I've asked her, in view of my impaired hearing, to really ring it when I get up to my 20 minutes. And I'm not flying back to Melbourne until late this evening, so I'll be drifting around here for an hour or so at the end of this talk, probably sitting on my suitcase out the front, if anyone wants to catch up with me afterwards for further details about anything. So, the population bomb. What a thrill to meet Paul and Anne. And I suppose, like everyone, I was reared on the population bomb. And to have the population bomb, and then the Club of Rome, Limits to Growth, 1974, which sort of followed on logically from the population bomb. Amazing. And what's happened to the population bomb? It's exploded! God! And so, what's it left us with? Well, we've got a plague of people. And how are we going to contain that plague of people? Let's just get an idea from those of you still in the room about what population looks like today. Could I have hands up those who've got more than one brother or sister? Look at population growth. Isn't that staggering? I'm keeping my hands down because I had one brother who died, and that was it. But I've got six children. Lest you think I'm a hypocrite. The challenge now is to think we're in the middle of this population explosion. There's the evidence from the hands that went up. And what are we going to do about it? And how are we going to stop that being a self-perpetuating phenomenon? Has anyone here read this wonderful book called Half the Sky? You don't read, do you? Well, this is written by Christoph and Wu Dunn. It's called Women Hold Up Half the Sky. And Christoph and Wu Dunn are two American writers, husband and wife, and they got a Pulitzer Prize. And I give Half the Sky out for free. I pay for it. To all my medical students. And I think the thought of women holding up half the sky, it comes from Confucius. It's just such a lovely idea. And we've denied women this ability to share equally with men in the future of our world. So please get hold of Christoph and Wu Dunn. Women hold up half the sky, and you won't be able to put it down. You won't go to sleep at night. And another book. Who has ever read Mary Stopes' Married Love? One, two, three, four, five. Oh, that's impressive. Mary Stopes was one of my heroines, so an Edinburgh lass who in 1916, I think it was, 1918, went to Canada and met this dashing young Canadian man, Reginald Ruggles Gates. Only a Canadian could call himself that, couldn't he? Reginald Ruggles Gates. And they got married. And 5 years later, Mary Stopes sued him in the High Court of Britain for failure to have intercourse with her. She was still Virgo intacta. So the High Court demanded physical evidence that her hymen was still intact. Can you believe that? And yes, it was still intact. So they said, well, of course, she had no right to be a recipient of intercourse from Reginald Ruggles Gates. She could divorce him, which she did, but she couldn't sue him because it's her husband's right to decide what happens about sex. The woman doesn't have anything to do with it. So the case was thrown out of court, and Reginald Ruggles Gates was discharged, and Mary Stopes had to pay damages, wait for it, of one penny. And that created Mary Stopes's career, really. And you can still buy Married Love. It's sold by Oxford University Press, and it came out in 1918. And it's one of the most exciting books that you'll, I think, ever find. And what's amazing about it is that she describes what it's like and has graphs of her sexual arousal during a menstrual cycle when she's not having sex with anyone. And it sort of scandalized Britain, but enabled Mary Stopes to set up the first family planning clinic in London in 1921. There was one just earlier than that in the United States, but it's the first one in Britain and the first one in Europe, and it's still there. And Mary Stopes today, I'll come back to, is a very exciting organisation. Here in Melbourne, we have Mary Stopes, based in 255 Bourke Street. Now, that's a secret, because they've just succeeded in putting on the market RU486 for medical termination of pregnancy all over Australia. And so the protests outside their building have been phenomenal. But you may have heard that in July the year before last, Melinda Gates gave no less than $4 billion, not million, but $4 billion for improving the reproductive health of women in the developing world. And Mary Stopes has proved to be one of the principal agencies that are now dispensing that money. And they have projects, family planning projects, abortion clinics running all over Asia. And I get Mary Stopes to come and lecture to our medical students, because when I ask, as I will on Monday, a class of final year medical students, okay, here you are, just about to qualify in medicine. Hands up those of you who would like to spend some time working in a developing country. Not necessarily your whole life, just some time. Do you know what percentage of hands go up? 95%. I mean, isn't that amazing? I give them a little sort of personal round of applause, because they are our hope for the future. And if we've got any worries about all the gloom and doom we've heard in the last 2 days, put it to one side, because we have got, amongst our youngsters, the most fantastic people who will take over. So, I think that the other thing that I'd like to mention, which is sexist, is Marcia Angel, who is now a professor in Harvard, and who in 2004 wrote an amazing book when she was editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. And her book was called The Truth About the Drug Companies. And she says, if you look at the Fortune 500 list of countries in the United States on the stock exchange, the top 10 of those 400, of those 500 companies, the top 10 are all big pharma. So they are more powerful than any of the oil companies or the mining companies or you name it. Big pharma is the richest source of money in the whole of the United States economy. And I spit on them. They're shit. Thank you for that. I've never been clapped for shitting. But what Marcia Angel has shown is that they inflate the price of oral contraceptives ridiculously high. And you find that the theory behind it is that if you want to sell contraceptives, I'm going to go on for another 5 minutes. Thank you. I'm near the end. If you want to sell contraceptives, then if you're a drug firm, you don't want to have a sales force. You use doctors. And you give them lunch or maybe an evening drink once a year. And they sell your product. So you have no sales force at all, which is an enormous saving. And you raise the price of the product as much as you possibly can so that it seems reasonable to have it on prescription. So here we are with, throughout Europe and Australia and in North America, this ridiculous situation where the oral contraceptive pill costs over $1 per pill when the manufacturing cost is a hundredth of that. The pill actually costs a fraction of a cent to make. And all that money goes to Big Pharma. So there's one drug company that's overcome this that I would like to highlight here, and that is an Indian drug company, Cipla, in Mumbai. And the CEO of Cipla is a most wonderful man called Yusuf Hamid, who was with me in Cambridge all those years ago when I was a PhD student. And Cipla is incredible because Yusuf has said, okay, the top priority for the developing world is to give women access to contraception, and anyone who's HIV positive, give them really cheap antiretrovirals. And there's an article about this, believe it or not, in Rupert Murdoch's The Australian, he must have missed it, in November last year, a full-page article on Yusuf Hamid. And I would like to suggest that we, the Academy, and SPA, invite Yusuf Hamid to come here and to provide Australia with the oral contraceptive pill made in India at cost price so that we could distribute it and it would cost almost nothing. Because I went several years ago to a lecture in Britain by my mentor, the great Sir Dougal Baird, who was professor of obstetrics in Aberdeen. And he gave this lecture, which is reprinted in the BMJ, and he called it A Fifth Freedom? And in the lecture, he said it was President Roosevelt who, on January the 6th, 1941, enunciated the four freedoms: freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And Sir Dougald said, I think we need a fifth freedom for women. Freedom from the tyranny of unwanted fertility. Isn't that fantastic? That's what I want to do for the future. Give all the world's women, developing and developed, in any way that I can, that fifth freedom. And just to come to an end, we can promote this in school in the following way. My final year medical students, particularly the women, love going to lecture in Melbourne University to the education students. And I can give a lecture, as I will on Monday, about you lot, to the final year medical students. They will repeat what they think is important about that, which may be just one sentence, to the education students, who will then, when they've graduated early next year, have that information out in school. So we called the program Teach the Teacher. It teaches the medical students how to teach, which is a gift that they don't normally get. The education students love it. And we've now got going out into school really informed lectures on teenage pregnancy, abortion, contraception, sexually transmitted diseases, you name it. And we have a website, which I'd like you all to write down. It's www.teachtheteacher, all one word, .com.au. And that's circulating around many of the medical schools, around many of the schools in Victoria. And it's the students who are in charge. And it's a wonderful way of exciting the next generation. So let me just close. We've got to feminize our whole approach to contraception. We've denied women access to the latest in contraceptives. We've got to fight that tooth and nail. We've got to really think of freedom from the tyranny of unwanted fertility, something that no man can ever experience. And we've got students who will promote that. And if we're worried about lowering Australia's population growth rate, which we all are, our students will see to it that population comes down, because it will depend on the wisdom of women who have the means wherewithal to control their fertility. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger, for bringing us back at the end of the conference to the beginning of the title, which is on population and the importance of women in the decision-making. We had decided that there should be some statement from this conference to somehow get across what we have been discussing to the wider audience, and particularly the decision makers and politicians. And Roger and Jenny and Ian and Nick Goldie and I have been wrestling with some kind form of words which this group would be prepared to acknowledge, and we hope that this may in some way help to perpetuate what we have learnt in the last 2 days. Is it up on the board? That's right. Ian is now going to present the resolution.
Thanks, Hugh. Roger reminded you of the words that Shakespeare wrote for Hamlet at the end of probably the most famous soliloquy in English theatre, that begins "to be or not to be" and ends "thus conscience doth make cowards of us all, and enterprises of great pith and moment in this regard their current turn awry and lose the name of action." It has been an abiding theme that we want to see some action coming out of the conference. At the very minimum, we thought there should be a conference declaration sufficiently platitudinous that we could all agree with it, but sufficiently punchy that it spells out some general principles. But I wanted to emphasise that passing this resolution does not of itself change the world. Even if it were improbably on the front page of every Murdoch paper tomorrow, which I don't expect, I don't think that would change the political discourse. The only way the political discourse will be changed is if each and every one of us take to heart the spreading of these principles and take it upon ourselves to talk to our friends and our associates and our colleagues and build what was discussed in the earlier session, a tsunami of momentum that sweeps away even the most obdurate politician. So the declaration has five recognitions that I think we would all agree with, and six points of action that we call on Australian governments, plural, to do, because some of these are the province of the Commonwealth government, some of state governments, and some of local governments. I'd emphasise that Shakespeare wrote a soliloquy. He didn't write a multilog, and we obviously can't have a 100-person drafting committee. I think we could probably all imagine amendments that would make this a better declaration, but at 2 minutes to four with 100 people in the room, we can't conceivably have a drafting group. But what I wanted to do is give you a minute to read it and then ask for a show of hands to see if there is majority support for something like this, because... Yes, the second last point is the same as the first. It obviously went through two incarnations. I mean, it might be interesting to have a show of hands to see whether people would like the general principle, develop plans to maintain essential services, or the more specific, develop plans to maintain the domestic power grid, food distribution systems, water and sanitation, because it's clear that those are the same point.
I can't.
Yeah. Sorry?
No, go on.
Yeah. I'm not going to read it out because my pet hate is people who stand at the podium and assume they can read better than you can. I think you've had a couple of minutes to read through those. Is there anything there that anyone really violently objects to? Yes, there is, clearly. I'm not sure how we deal with this because...
We haven't got much time.
Please, a very quick suggestion, recognising that we can't have a 100-person drafting committee.
Have I missed something? I can't see anything about the rate of immigration there. Rate of immigration. Have I missed something?
I think the drafting group felt that we would all agree that the population needed to be stabilised, and that implicitly means curbing migration, but some people would be unhappy about an explicit reference to immigration.
I think it has to be explicit because it's 60% of our population growth.
But not everyone will agree with that, that it needs to be explicit.
Yeah, it's got to be explicit.
One over there.
I mean, this is a population conference.
I'll test the feeling of the meeting by asking for two show of hands. First, who would like it to be explicit rather than implicit? And secondly, let me see that show of hands first. Who would like it to be explicit rather than implicit? Who would not like it to be explicit? So it's about 2-1 in favour of being explicit. Could I now call for a show of hands? Who would be so unhappy about it being explicit that they would be unhappy about agreeing to the declaration? Yeah. Yes. Of which 60% is immigration. Yeah. Would people be happy to amend the fifth point to add after 400,000 annually of which 60% is net inward migration? Yes. Okay. Any other very quick suggestions? Yes, down the front.
That you don't have underneath the call for action anything to do with population. It's only you recognise it, but you're not asking the government to do something about it. I think that needs to be there, like, number one.
Did you hear that?
The issue of contraception is there. Is your point that there isn't anything explicit under action about migration?
Could I suggest that I think I understand people's reluctance the way that the immigration issue can be used, but it would be possibly less controversial if it was just something about asking the government to develop a strategy for a sustainable population for Australia. Keep it a little bit more general, but have it in there.
Hmm.
Stabilised.
Would people be happy with an extra dot point calling on governments to develop a policy for stabilising the Australian population as a matter of urgency? I see support for that. Any other points of urgency?
Respectfully, that just as hard to stop coal exchanges in the weak czar category because often it's something like developing to stop coal exports.
Well, there isn't a time period specified. We call on governments to stop coal exports, but that doesn't imply that they're going to stop tomorrow, I don't think. But, I mean, if people are prepared to say phase out coal exports... who would prefer phase out to stop? Who would prefer stop to phase out?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's more for stop than phasing out, I'm sorry. Any other points of great urgency? Yes, please. Yeah, that's a good point. You can't distribute food that hasn't been produced, so good point. Food production and distribution systems, yes?
I've got the microphone, so can I just say mine quickly? It's just a very simple one. You've got end all clearing of habitat, and I think if you change that to destruction of habitat, because clearing doesn't cover the marine environment.
Good point. Destruction of habitat, yep. Right up the back.
I'd like to just make a comment. We were very mindful of what Richard Dennis said to us last night at the dinner, that if you want to get a message across, you've got to keep it simple. And what we seem to be doing is exactly what he said we shouldn't do, which is everybody's going to have another thing to put up.
Yeah. Can I call for a quick show of hands? Two alternatives: decarbonise our energy supply, which is there, or develop clean renewable energy systems. Who would prefer decarbonise our energy supply? Who would prefer develop clean renewable energy systems? It's about 50-50, so I think... we're trying to keep it as simple as we can. Yes?
Speakers was discussing the actual subject, but he was saying that the sciences are integral as far as in our education systems to be allow people to become, and especially the younger generation, knowledgeably aware of environmental issues and how it impacts on the social and economic systems. And you haven't got anything there relating to education in that regard.
Good point. Well, under recognising that a sustainable future requires widespread ecological literacy, and under what we call upon Australian governments to, I'd like to see the implementation of the principles of sustainability as part of the core curriculum of education at all levels. But implement the principles of sustainability as part of the core curriculum at all levels. I actually gave a paper on that to Australian campuses towards sustainability last week. Yes, Mark. So it'd be better to say develop plans to maintain domestic power rather than the domestic power grid. Yep.
And go hand in hand with decarbonise is,
I think people want domestic power, but they don't necessarily want the grid. I'm very happy to have my hot shower coming from solar energy rather than the domestic grid.
I have a slightly different grid. Can I speak? Thank you.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Can we please target it more to Australians and their governments rather than Australian governments? We've been talking a lot about that people need to create change, but we're not communicating to the Australian people. We're communicating to the governments, which are failing to listen.
The suggestion is that we replace the words Australian governments with Australians and their governments. Who would be in favour of that change? Large numbers. Who would be against? No one. So it's Australians and their governments. I'm conscious that it's 4:10. Yes, please.
Ian, I wonder if under recognising we couldn't have the simple statement recognising that human economic systems are dependent upon ecological life support systems.
I don't have a problem with that. Would anyone have a problem with that? Recognising that human economic systems are dependent upon ecological life support systems. Yeah. I agree with that. There's another point up the top.
I'd like you to amend the last point to say make contraceptives more freely available. Add in the more. I used to be involved in drug regulation, and it's more complex than just that statement. And I don't want you to invalidate the whole thing by having too simplistic a statement there.
People happy with more freely? Yep. And there's another. So, anything else? Are we, John? I think that was partial freedom rather than universal freedom, wasn't it? Yeah. Can I see a show of hands for those in favour of this as multiply amended? Who would support this resolution, please? Thank you. Is anyone against it? No? In that case, I'll declare it carried nem con, as they say in other places. What we're going to do with it, I think all eyes swivel to Jenny, but my understanding is that A, there will be a media release, B, there will be a statement on a website somewhere if someone figures out how to get statements on a website, and C, it will be communicated to all delegates so that you can use it like the Club of the Righteous in prosecuting this agenda in your various circles. Thank you
very much, Ian. Good luck. Well, So now we conclude our adjustment with thanks for the support that we've got. First of all, the Academy of Science, which provided the funds and the venue for the conference, and to Michelle Piercy and Samira Cook, who have been helping all the time through the conference. Also, we owe a gratitude to Dick Smith, who provided $5,000 towards the support of the conference. And to the Sustainable Population Australia, which had the idea for the conference, which put it together, and which has put a considerable amount of money, including the scholarships for the students, into the conference. And finally, the evidence that the power of one. This conference has been generated, run, and inspired by Jenny Goldie. She said to me in January, when I asked her who's going to be on the organising committee, she said, "You and me, but I'll do it all." And she has. And it's just extraordinary. I don't know anybody who can run a conference like this entirely by themselves. And so I think all our gratitude should be to Jenny, because it has been a magnificent conference, I think. So thank you very much. And with that, I close the meeting. Thank you. That's got your name on it. Is that your copy?
No, it is my copy. I left it on the desk.